Welcome to Inside Out, the Naked Truth, where we explore everyday issues to discover their core truth so that we may understand them, open our hearts, add a little more fun to our lives, and see it all from another perspective.
Tonight's show is coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of Northern California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider. And together we will explore these, hopefully, truths through a variety of means, humor, some conversation, poetry, music, sketches, and hopefully your comments.
Tonight's show is brought to you by Go Raw, 100% natural, organic raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you.
And Go Raw can be found in Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Costco, on desert islands, even, I understand, where people are wasting away, but they've got their Go Raw seeds, and that's keeping them alive, and are we happy? Or go online to Go Raw Products. And thank you, Go Raw, for supporting our effort here to plummet into the essence of human experience and see if we can extract some punchlines.
And we're going to dedicate tonight's show to Robert Freeland and his upcoming wedding.
Oh, there you go. So, Rochelle, tonight we're going to, tonight's show is called The Catch and Release Program for the Ego. Yes, you heard it here. The Catch and Release Program for the Ego.
Well, you coined the expression, Errol.
What?
Of a fabricated self to explain the ego. And I must admit, it works really well for me. We humans, mammals, have a very strong survival mechanism. Our corporeal self has within it everything we need to survive, stay alive. And the fabricated self, ego, believes it too must stay alive. So we do whatever we can to keep an image of ourselves alive, even, and this is really crazy, at the risk of losing our corporeal selves. I mean, imagine the image of a hero warrior taking precedent over the reality of being killed and killing. But that fabricated self is constantly trying and succeeding in making us believe it is who we are. It is really easy to recognize the ego by recognizing certain attributes of the fabricated self. Fabricated selves weave separation into every relationship. The FS, fabricated self, is either bigger, better, more or less knowing than anyone else. Equally, does not play a big part in the fabricated self. Equality is not what it's about. I recognize my fabricated self most when it feels threatened by someone I give my power to make me feel a certain way. You know that expression? You made me feel dot, 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 dot. You make me feel so dot, 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 dot.
Don't you hate those little dot, dot, dots? I hate those little dot, dot, dot. If you see them coming up the road, pop them. Dot, dot, dot.
And what power I give to you. Once again, whenever you give your power away to another person or situation, you lose your power. But when you give your power away to the mystery, you gain power. And another way of knowing the ego, comparison is of the ego. When I am, without definition, vulnerable, open, receptive to the moment, I am in and with whom I am with, I enter into a dance, a real dance, when I realize that I am part of a whole. I am not less or more, but a real part. And I partner with every moment, person, situation, and dance, leading, following to the music of life. I like moving beyond a fabricated self into the unknown. I just have to focus outside of myself to see inside myself, to know I am, needs no proof. To know that I am needs no proof.
an orange kiss. Do you remember how I would recite, how I blow my lines, and how my face?
Well, maybe I was childish, foolish, before schoolish, amateurish, loose and coolish. But I had to grow through my ears. Take a look at me now and take a taste of the morning. I'm not in it for the bread, I'm in it for the gravy. Come on.
That was Elton John's song called Ego.
Uh-huh.
I'm in it for the gravy. I'm in it to make a kill. I'm just totally in it for the self. Which reminds me, today I picked up Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth, where he really nails the ego. I think most of the book is all about that, for those of you who may or may not have read it. But he says this: whatever behavior the ego manifests, the hidden motivating force is always the same, the need to stand out, be special, be in control, the need for power, for attention, for more, and of course, the need to feel a sense of separation, that is to say, the need for opposition, enemies. There is always a hidden agenda, always a sense of not enough yet, of insufficiently in lack, that needs to be filled. It uses people and situations to get what it wants, and even when it succeeds, it is never satisfied for long. There you have it. And I live with that bugger all day long, constantly bugging me, constantly doing all those things that I just said, and I catch it doing it, and it's so humbling.
Well, we have to know that you are, without definition, is where we are in terms of evolution. I mean, a child needs to know that they're there, and they know that they're there by being held, fondled, seen. So it's deriving its sense of self from the outside world. It's only as we evolve that we realize that we exist, whether the outside world recognizes it or not. So up until that moment of realization, we're constantly trying to get recognition from the outside world, from the world beyond, outside ourselves. And as long as we do that, we're in the ego. So the ego, in a way, is part of the immature self. And it doesn't go away until the self truly matures to know that it is, no matter what.
Well, my ego is now thoroughly confused by that, because the interesting thing about talking about this subject is because it's simultaneously occurring as we talk about it. You know, the ego is involved in the... Back off. Yeah, but I got a lot of important things to say about my... If we're talking about me, then I have a lot of important things to say about me, and I'm so glad we're talking about me, says my ego.
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, like, I've talked to a lot of people and make the statement, only because it's a normal statement, you know, that I said or blah, blah. And some people who consider themselves very spiritual say, well, you're...
Rochelle put up quotation marks with her fingers, by the way, in case you audience radio listeners didn't see her. Under the word spiritual. So now we have the word spiritual out there in the cosmos with quotation marks, fingers going up and down.
Because I'm going to forget what I wanted to even say. Oh, I remember now. So that there's a disclaimer that a lot of people, you speak and they say, oh, well, you're channeling this. As if, yes, of course we are. When we're out of the way, truth can come forward uninterrupted, not corrupted by our ego. But when we need to mention this, it seems to me that we're afraid that the very words that come out of our mouths aren't pure. It's like we have to scrub them clean and say, oh, well, they're being channeled. You see, you can't really like have a true spiritual thought unless it's being channeled. But then who's channeling what? And who's the who and what's the what?
Welcome to next week's show where we'll be talking about who's channeling what. Yes, sir.
And folks. Who's the who and what's the what?
and who's the who and what to what? I actually made a decision that I was going to channel myself now because why should I wait, you know, to be channeled like, you know, 35,000 years from now? So, and then some guy will channel me and he'll make all the money and he'll get all the accolades. My ego says, channel me now.
Well, that's a good way of knowing that you're in it for the ego. If you don't get the accolades and you get depressed, then you know who's running the show.
that's the humbling thing about it. When I'm honest with myself, there's very little of my experience that is not of the ego. It's all dealing with the body and how it feels and more of this and all the judgments, the incessant judgments I have about this, that, and the other, especially about the other. You have no idea how much. Not so much with the this and the that, but the other. I really can crank out the old judgment and separation. Matter of fact, I can get so separated from the other, I don't even remember who they were. I just remember they were other than who I thought they were.
Well, the funniest thing of all is that most people are coming from their egos, but they don't have any idea. They don't even know what we're talking about in terms of ego.
It's my ego that tells me that.
No, but that's true. I mean, you see people who are just like all puffed up and, you know, need lots of aggrandizement and lots of me, 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 see me, see me, see me, but totally unaware of it. Just like they bump into you because they... Otherwise, they wouldn't know they were there, but they bump into you so that they can feel themselves because they're the bumper.
And you're the bumpy.
And I'm the bumpy. Moment. And but so you, the bumper needs a bumpy. I won't
right.
know it's
yeah.
bumped.
Yeah, it's very bumpy on the ego ride. I did have this insight once. I call these my little wisdom nuggets that kind of pop through when my ego's asleep.
Taking a rest.
Taking a rest.
Because it works so hard.
It works so bloody hard. Anyway, the insight was the impulse to be more, is true and natural. There's the ego's way of having you be more is to puff you up with fear. God's way of having you be more is to fill you up with love.
Oh, that's so nice.
Isn't that sweet?
Very sweet. Yeah. Very sweet.
I felt sweet saying it. You know, right. I felt like I added.
Do you think that everything about the ego is fear-based? You think everything?
Yeah. Well, yes, because as Eckhart, I was just reading today, as he points out, it basically knows that it isn't anything. So, here it is. Why fear? Because the ego arises by identification with form. And deep down, it knows that no forms are permanent, that they're all fleeting. So there's always a sense of insecurity around the ego, even if on the outside it appears confident.
Right. So, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty good awareness. I don't know. The Course in Miracles says the same thing.
It does say the same thing. It does say the same thing.
That's what he was, he was impressioned by.
I don't know that. I think he had his own experience of...
All of that of, things.
Yeah. How do I know what he... But here's another way of kind of looking at the ego that I think might be of some... use, and then afterward I'm going to come back and I'm going to have
questions.
A piece. Then we will have questions. As a matter of fact, you can call in and ask the you could ask us the questions, or you can ask the ego. Our ego's the questions. Either one will be happy to oblige. And the call-in number is 888-627-6008. But the ego can be very subtle, and I think this song here might help us appreciate the subtleties of the ego. Here we go.
Cause he gets up in the morning and he goes to work at 9, and he comes back home at 5:30, gets the same train every time. Cause his world is built on punctuality that never fails, and he's all so good, and he's all so fine, and he's all so healthy in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, best thing so conservatively. And his mother goes to meetings while his father pulls a mane, and she stirs the tea with counselors while discussing foreign trade, and she passes looks as well as bills at every suave young man. And he's all so good, and he's all so fine, and he's all so healthy in his body and his mind. Well-respected man about town, doing the best thing so conservatively. And he likes his own backyard, and he likes his bags the best, cause he's better than the rest, and his iron sweat smells the best. And he hopes to grab his father's ring when paper passes on, cause he's all so good, and he's all so fine, and he's all so healthy in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, doing the best thing so conservatively. And he plays a song to Charles, and he goes to the regatta. He adores the girl next door, cause he's dying to get at her, but his mother knows the best about the matrimony stakes, cause he's all so good, and he's all so fine, and he's all so healthy in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, doing the best thing so conservatively.
I am willing. Really. In spite of what I look like, to step out into you. Yoo-hoo! Yoo-hoo! So there's this form. So what? Unless we stand in the light, we couldn't have shadows anyway. So who do you think are, huh? Some mistake? Is that what you think? Some dent in matter? Just happening to think in textures? Well, I saw you. Peeking outside yourself. Oh, you thought you could elude me with your gray smile and coiffured hair, manicured to mediocrity. But I don't believe it, not for a minute. Because you see, I saw you looking at me. That's right. Oh, you didn't think I'd notice. But you see, I figure when someone stops to look at me, they must be there. And you know what? When I saw you looking at me, I felt good about myself. I felt terrific. So what does that make you? Some cheap imitation person? Some synthetic lover? Cause if beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and you saw me looking beautiful, well, pretty neat things must be going on in your eyeballs. And if that's the case, here's looking at you.
The last was a poem I wrote with Rochelle reciting it to original music some over 30 years ago. She sounded like she was about 3 years old, didn't she?
Okay.
That was you.
It didn't sound like I know myself to sound today, no, so it had to be a while ago.
We wanted to take you back in time, a listening audience. And the song was The Kinks. A well-respected man. It might be worth looking up those lyrics and living the accepted life. It's a great place for the ego to hide out in what we might call
respectability.
Respectability, conventional life, conventional living. That's the thing about the ego. It's so like creative because it draws upon all my natural creativity to pursue its own ends. But here's the key, and we started talking about this on the way over. According to Eckhart, just being aware of it already kind of stops it in its tracks. It kind of because you can't have real awareness and be in the ego at the same time, because awareness is so inclusive and expansive that it essentially, in that moment, is a moment where the ego just kind of is not even there.
I became aware of something when you were saying that there's a difference between awareness and recognizing. Like you can recognize, like you can say, hey, I'm in my ego, and that's your ego talking about its ego. But the awareness of its futility to govern your life, the awareness of its transiency in your life, that the ego is not something that is infinite. It's so finite, it's as finite as your skin, and it will dry up and crumble and disappear. And it, just like your corporeal self, wants nothing more than to stay alive.
However, having said that, I did find out that when you leave this life, of course, you can't take anything of the ego. You can only take that which has spiritual value, and one carry-on.
It's your favorite joke.
Did I say it already on this show?
I think so, but say it again. Go ahead.
You
know, I know
for those
it's your
of
favorite.
You who haven't heard it, and here's the deal on the carry-on. When you wake up in your post ego / finite pain body experience, and they greet you with, okay, carry on. And it's interesting, we've talked about quote many books here in the program, but the Urantia book, which is one of them, which goes into great detail about our potential life as we leave here, very worth reading. It's certainly
a, if you have a good year to read it.
Yeah, if you have a year to read it, or if you're coming to the end of your life and you want to see how it ends, you can go to the end of the book, and it'll tell you how the universe ends, or at least how your life fits into that ending. But it says that we do actually pick up right where we left off, that we're in this evolving selfhood that is the one that's attached or integral or at one with universe reality, but has as a delineated beingness, there is individuality. So let's look at that. How does individuality, which from what I understand is of the source, is inherently part of universe reality. How do you think individuality is different from the ego?
I think that individuality is like who you are, you know, and the ego is like putting on all the dressings, you know, to putting up the flags, saying, this is who I am, this is who I am, see me, see me, see me, see me. But your individuality doesn't need to draw attention to itself as much as because it is uniquely you. I mean, that to me is what individuality is. It's the uniqueness of who you are, rather than you're not a clone of anybody else. You don't have to walk and talk like anybody else. In fact, sometimes that the ego is propels us into sameness because it's so frightened of its own uniqueness.
I don't know if it's frightened of its uniqueness.
Well, it's uniqueness in the sense that it's unique in a way that's not definable. The way a blade of sand, a grain of sand is unique, but it becomes a lot of sand when it all gets together with other pieces of unique sand.
I see. For those of you who are a unique piece of sand and you're listening tonight,
a grain of sand.
Well, the Earth, really, from the point of view of the cosmos, is a grain of sand.
Right.
So, what does that make us? Like a little,
like a smaller grain of sand.
Conscious dirt is what I like.
Was it Shel Silverstein who had that book, kids' book? You know, where you you went out of the planet and then you.
No.
Who wrote that?
I don't know. But I don't think it was.
It may have been Aronsky or Aronsky.
Whatever.
Whatever. There was this children's book, you know, and there you were in this little garden, and then all of a sudden you saw the garden from a higher perspective.
To the power of 10. I kept moving out to the power of 10.
Right. Until you saw the planet.
Yeah. And, you know halfway through, you were in a suburb of Chicago, remember?
Right. Right. No.
No.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that's okay. Because if you know what you're talking about, at some point you may work hard enough to have me understand it not care.
This is fun. This is a fun thing. This is something he says. The ego comes about through a split in the human psyche in which identity separates into two parts that we could call I and me, or me and myself. Every ego is therefore schizophrenic, to use the word in its popular meaning of split personality. You live with a mental image of yourself, a conceptual self that you have a relationship with. Life itself becomes conceptualized and separated from who you are when you speak of my life. The moment you say or think my life and believe in what you are saying, rather than it just being a linguistic convention, you have entered into the realm of delusion. Whoops.
The thing is, it's so insidious and it's so subtle, and it does go back for me to the sense that we're not aware of it at a certain point in our evolution. It's just where we are.
That's right. It's where we are is just this sense of me, what was the rest of it? Me, myself, and mine. Sums it up for all you yourself and yous out there. That was a group called De La Soul, reinforcing the whole notion that we're talking about tonight on Insight Out the Naked Truth. We're getting down. We're getting very naked tonight because we're really
exposing the ego.
And, and we're the first to to acknowledge, well, not the first. You see, my ego says we're the first. It wants to say, well, we're the first to acknowledge that we're blah, blah, blah. But you see, that there it is. The ego is jumping and wants to be the first.
We have, it's a prism, you know, and we're just seeing one tiny little part of it. And I just feel like putting out our little part of it helps people see more of it. And when people put out their part of it, we can see more of it, more of whatever it is.
I did have a poem that's kind of my version of the ego, which I'd like to share at this point in the program.
Who wants to share it, you or your ego?
He stops. He thinks. He turns slowly. And like Jack Benny, he says, I'm thinking. When asked, your money or your life, for those of you who remember that. But this is a piece I wrote many years ago, and it's called The Hour of Humiliation. And it's in reference to the hour when Jesus was being, when they were about to crucify him, he was being rebuked, hounded, what do you call it, derisively attacked, blah, blah, blah. He was being humiliated, put this thorny wreath around his head. I mean, he was just, it was the ultimate confront to the self as they treated him that way. So I integrate some of those imagery into this poem, and this is called The Hour of Humiliation. The ego, standing up and preening, strutting around the stage in the mind, waiting for laughs and applause, like a comedian, the fool, parading itself before spirited morticians, not understanding the need to be humbled, to be the fool with no applause, just whips and scourging and thorny wreaths round his head. Smugly self-deceived, basking in enfeebled acclaim, jaundiced reviews wending their way into oblivion. An ignominious performance attended only by critics and jaded pedestrians who stop long enough to gape and spit. A defrocked, defunct comic. Foolishly curled up on the empty stage floor, with only the light of a rehearsal bulb throwing his tears in shadows. The ego, a disrumpled has-been, sobbing on the splintered performance place with echoes of canned laughter scorching his brain.
I am the rays of the rising sun, snow on the mountains of the moon, the far-flung canopy of stars, the shadows of late afternoon. I am the wisdom of the sage. I am the refuge of all who weep. I am the mother of all who live. I am the promises I keep. I am the one who sits with sorrow. I am the one your pain. I am the hope of your tomorrow. And all is lost, I still remain. I am the one who will remain. am the seed that longs to bloom. The river yearning for the sea. The heartfelt hope of every womb. I am the faith you place in me. I am the silence and the sound, the gentle rain that breaks the stone. I am the dream of love unbound. I am the way that calls you home. I am the I am the one who feels your pain. I am the hope of your tomorrow. When all is lost, I will remain. I am the one who will remain. I am the I am the one who feels your pain. I am the hope of your tomorrow. When all is lost, I will remain. I am the one, I still remain.
Pretty.
Beautiful. That was Janice Ian.
Oh, wow.
Our good friend Dennis. Hope you're listening, Dennis. Talked to him the other night, was reminded he'd forgotten all about Janice Ian. And there was this song that I'd never even heard her sing before. What a beautiful song. And to me, it's like a juxtaposition of two different realities.
What's the name of that song?
It's called I Am the One.
I Am the One.
And it... clearly is, I think she taps into those universal dimensions of self, that we are that one of which she speaks. And the beauty of it is we all share in being that same one, and there really is no room for the ego in that shared self. Sharing, it's by its very nature, excludes the ego, because one thing the ego
unless you're sharing because it makes you feel better than somebody else.
But then is that sharing?
Well,
is that
that's
else?
Right.
Is that giving and taking?
I don't know. You know, that's the funny thing. It's like I realized, like, you know, like I think of an egoless state of being, it flows. You know, it doesn't try and stop and control a moment. It doesn't try and stop and control anything. It just, it moves from moment to moment. And I wrote, the ego does not flow. Unless it thinks by flowing, it will save its life.
There you go. We're going to flow? I survive? Let's flow.
Exactly. And so that's what makes it so insidious.
Do you,
you
take
know?
Visa, MasterCard? I'll take three flows just in case. The first two crash.
Right, exactly. And so it's always coming back to itself, you know, checking itself out to make sure it's there. You know, and I mean, I'm so aware that, like, I look in myself, I pass a mirror and check myself to make sure I'm there. Because if I don't look at myself, sometimes I don't remember that I'm there.
You know, I had an experience years ago. I was living in this little cottage in Coconut Grove, Florida, and I had this one mirror in the living room. And I had made this poster for something, and I just covered the mirror with that poster. And I could not believe how many times I saw that poster. I had it memorized. In the course of a day, which told me, looking in the mirror. But here's a metaphor that I've appreciated about the difference between the ego self and the sharing self, and it comes from the world of physics and bonding. You know, everything bonds, and there's like essentially two different bonds. Scientists out there, please forgive my layman's simplified version of this, but there's ionic bonding, and that's where things join up because there's kind of a give and take of electrons. So in order for this atom to get stable, it needs to grab the electron of that atom and then hold it together, and it forms a special relationship. Admittedly, don't take the metaphor too deep, literally, because we obviously need ionic bonds, except for my friend Dennis. Somehow he does not seem to need any ionic bonds, but that's another story. Anyway, but then there's this other kind of bonding, which is called covalent bonding, and I really encourage you to look it up because...
Or do it,
even better. Look it up. Look up its skirts, so to speak. It's a little chemical skirts. And in what it says is that these atoms are shared. They share the electrons. And one example of that is the atoms that form a diamond. They're shared electrons. And somehow the sharing, because I think sharing doesn't come from compulsivity. To me, the ego, everything about the ego comes from some kind of compulsivity, whereas sharing is freely chosen. And I think when we do share in that sense, not to get anything, but to really abide in that unified experience that is the result and is the very essence of sharing.
Right. I find that there's something, when it happens, and I'm standing over here thinking about it happening, there's those wonderful moments in my life when that bonding takes place, when I'm not thinking of what I can get from the bonding, I'm not thinking of what I can get out of the sharing. It just happens so naturally that all I want to do is give fully of myself to another.
Is that in there? Is that in the
equation? The receiving is not, I don't do it to receive. It's like it's so replete. The giving is so replete that, whatever comes back has to come back because it's a respiratory experience. But I don't know what's going to come back, and I don't plan what's going to come back, and I don't give to get back. It's just purely, I experienced it most when I was a new mother, when the first time, that I fed my child, really early in the morning, like 3 o'clock in the morning, a time when in my pre-motherhood life would never have awoken for any reason whatsoever.
even when I wanted to, quote-unquote, suckle her, she would not
never,
get up.
Never, no way, at 3 o'clock in the morning. Forget it. Morning.
By the way, I did not use floating quote marks with my hands on that. I just relied on the pure sound. By the way, you reminded me of another wisdom nugget that came to me. It came to me years ago, and that was when we seek to get, we become disenchanted and cynical. But when we seek to give, there's no end to possibilities. And I think that's pretty much says what that said. Unless you turn the words around.
I made a quiche tonight. I think it was the quiche.
It was? Oh, I would like to share this, though, and that is the, referring to this excellent body of wisdom called the Urantia Book, and it says, its way of saying all this about the fear base of the ego is that it's doubt, and that that essentially, especially from the point of view of someone who has stepped into a transcendent reality, a believer, if you will, or someone who has engaged with the awareness or allowed the awareness to begin to animate and move him or her into a greater sense of beingness, that what will come up often is doubt once you've stepped on this path. And so years ago, I wrote this piece as a kind of homage, ode to doubt, with a little bit of Western metaphors to help us deepen into it. The piece is called The Culprit.
What culprit hangs round my barn, waiting to pounce on me with his snarly paws? Who hisses with disgust like some ancient rattlesnake that lost its poison but still thinks it has a bite? What no good tramp sits on my back stoop looking for a handout? Hand out of my soul's what he wants. Old scud-faced doubt chipping away at my resolve. You parasite, lingering on borrowed energy siphoned off some passing pickup while the driver was in the john. Now you come over to my spread, trying to grab hold and piss worry all over me, just like a fly, without the good sense to know you're dining on dung, thinking it's a feast. Well, I fancy some much tastier grub, Mr. Toilet Stench, the likes of which don't leave no feces for no one to have to clean up. Get back, you poacher, you encroacher. Yet he gnaws at the cracks in my foundation. You got some nerve, old limp muscle jellyfish man. Oh, but you're no man. Sometimes I just forget. Cause no man I know walks with that gait of legs twisted round, side back, and arms suction linked to slimy, scaly torso. A man, huh? Just a worn out vinyl carcass of days of disbelief. Back off, spit for brains. You can't hold me up, you lopsided rascal. You can't even hold up yourself. You cross-eyed outlaw. You can't steal insides. Don't you know that? Standing at the end of the street, toy guns in your holsters, thinking to blow my faith up with a couple of bang signs coming out of your barrels? Two-gun leech, that's what you are. So why don't you just get back on that old marrowless pony of yours you call guilt? No wonder he rides in circles. Home, guilt. Giddy up. Take your master to the hoosegow where they'll serve him yesterday's fickle beef. Oh, what good are your rusted tears? Maybe they'll drown away the cell bars of distrust. But they ain't gonna shake me back into broken compass wandering. Now why does that marmot snivel at my door, threatening me with all sorts of scattered mind tales? Cyclone's coming. No rain this year. You're no damn good. No one cares about you. Won't have nothing to eat come winter. From what outhouse do you dredge up this drivel, old puss puke? old scum, venom, doubt, trying to rob me of a full trough of sensible barley. But don't you know my stores are full? You old good for nothing but to fertilize with past despair. I'll not be having you creeping at my door, not with your mopey, whiny, ratchety voice always saying, no, you can just start trucking, my man, 'cause I don't cotton to no needle-nosed, oily, shallow-cheeked bearer of glum tidings tearing on my land. I got too much living, and I need some room. So what do you got for me today, Mr. Booger Sucker? Come on, bring it on. Bring it on. You heard me now. Bring it on. You just bring it on. Bring it on.
Oh, your images of doubt are really funny. Booger Sucker.
I was inspired from my deep subconscious. That was the culprit.
So do you think doubt is a byproduct of the ego?
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Does. It does.
Yeah, because the doubt comes in on the assumption that there's some not doubt happening. So that means that part of you has sort of gotten in touch with the more fundamental substantive reality, that essential self. But out of habit or inertia or just the fact that we're animal origin and mature beings, the doubt is constantly coming up. And so that's why you should play that piece of music every time it comes up until you know it by heart. Incidentally, that's The Culprit, and it's from a CD of poems put to music by Charles Mozell. Put that music together with me. And the CD is called Psalms for the 21st Century. And it kind of is a journey from doubt kind of pieces, the challenge of the ego or just the unknowing. And then it moves into pieces that are more coming from a place of awareness. And so if you're interested in having a copy of that, please let us know. Get in touch with us. You can go to our website, www.thelaughingheart.org, thelaughingheart.org, and we hope your hearts are laughing. And we want to thank the Laughing Heart of Raw Foods, who is sponsoring this show tonight and helping us, if nothing else, at least make some steps, if not strides, away from an ego orientation.
Well, I think that, you know, you nailed it when you said it's about sharing. And I realize when I focus on another, when I truly focus on them and see them as something to delight in, I see them as something wonderful, I am not sitting there going, well, how can I get something from them? It's not about me. And I think that it becomes this bonding that you talk of. It becomes a sharing. It becomes a union, a unified entity almost, when I do that. And it really feels good. It just feels really, really good. And when I don't do it, I go into doubt. I doubt that I'll still be there if I give myself completely in that moment, that I may not be there when the moment's over. I may disappear into that moment or disappear into that other person. And the truth is, like we said in our vows to each other, I become more. No, it wasn't our vows. It was something else.
Yeah. It was our memos to each other.
Memos to each other.
To leave the toilet seat down. Right next to that.
But I become more by sharing with you.
And we hope that you are becoming more of your true self, less of the fabricated self, as you listen and join us. Next week, we're gonna get into this subject that is going to blow your ego out of the water.
Well,
it won't even be.
If your ego is not in the water, we kind of have a problem.
There is that. Well, for those of you whose egos are in the water, and it's a, if it's a dirty water,
putrid water.
Yeah, putrid water. You don't want to go there. But you can reach us again, first at thelaughinghearts.org. You can send us an email, estrider@gmail.com. And if you'd like a copy of my CD, that is available. And it's quite an intense journey.
Well, give a yell.
Yeah, just yell out here. We'll open the window. We're at Lupin Lodge, a beautiful 110 acres.
Come on down.
Come on down. Clothing's optional, but as we like to say.
Oh, what do we like to say?
The truth is always
naked.
Naked.
Yes. And I think I like to say to undress and de-stress.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. As we're doing the show, there was a deer walked just by me, and as far as I could see, it had no ego.
Or any clothes.
It was a naked, egoless deer. And as is my wife so often, a deer. She is a deer.
Oh.
You are a deer.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm going to cry.
And but you'll have to sleep outside tonight with the rest of your family, dear. Any last remarks here, Rochelle, before we go about the ego? And just be aware of it.
What is the wonderful thing you wrote about the ego?
Huh? Oh, one of the things that I wrote is that another little wisdom nugget. When you can laugh at yourself, you get too slippery for your ego to get a hold of you. But what I will suggest is to remember resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Good night.
Good night.